This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. We hope you saw our WRX GR Corolla piece that I was a little annoyed by, because I wanted to dump snow on the day we shot B-roll.
We were a little late in the season.
Cold and snowy, and we shot all the B-roll, and that's what it looks like. And the next morning we woke up, blizzard, as we did interviews in the blizzard. Right. And I just kept like, thinking, this is what the B-roll's supposed to be, is blizzard.
I know.
But it's okay. Ended up with a cool piece. We hope you've seen it. It's on the original Everyday Driver channel, the big channel, and we hope you've seen that comparison. Pass it on to somebody that has either one of those cars or likes either one of those cars. We'd appreciate it. We were traveling all weekend, actually all last week, many Toyota products, including one that released this morning.
Toyota's had to be driven. The Land Cruiser is now out, an actual drive of the Land Cruiser. But more importantly, it's in the dirt. Mm-hmm. And Toyota did set up a nice off-road course for the Tacoma TRD Pro, but also the Land Cruiser was a lot of wheel articulation, as you'll see in the video. Yep. Actually, it kind of put it through through some good off-road kinds of things that Land Cruisers would encounter.
It surpassed a fire road, which I appreciated
very, very
much. It's
better than a fire road.
Yes, for sure.
At least we get 30 degrees roll angle on the inclinometer.
I got to say, when the gauge matches itself out, I go, yeah, that's a lot that you've designed to get. Because I'm guessing that beyond the edge of your gauge is when stuff starts falling over. So let's not do that. Yeah.
It did turn orange.
Yeah.
Past 30 degrees, it turns orange, like
you might want to think this through. So we didn't have to think it through, which was good. So the Land Cruiser piece is out. We have stuff on the new Camry, the TRD Pro, and also later on we have something on the Signia. The wagon version of the Crown is coming up later. So that was all done in 1 week. It was a whirlwind week with our friends at Toyota. They flew us down to San Diego, which was very nice of them. Put us up in a nice hotel. It's the standard press launch thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Fly all these journalists that don't have a lot of money to somewhere to act like they have a lot of money. Drive a lot of cars they don't own.
Taste the good life, right?
Run away and talk about it. So it begins now.
Now, we like that we're getting more and more requests for this 8-car hauler that we've been talking about forever now, now that we have acquired HOD. But a big shout out to Pranav at the San Diego airport. We were sitting in the lounge there and he came by. So thank you for saying something. We really appreciate it.
We were massively delayed. Also, Marcus was there as well. Marcus said hello to me. It was very funny because you and I are sitting together. We've got our laptops out. They have Everyday Driver stickers on the back. I think one of us was wearing a cap. I forget. Our big Pelican case is Everyday Driver. If you've heard of us, we're not hard to spot.
And please say hello.
So
it's
it was
totally
very
fine.
Cool that people totally came over fine. And said hello. It was very fun. Our flight was quite delayed. So we hung out for a bit, actually got some work done, and I did some edit, which is very funny. I edit everywhere. But that was going on, and it's just nice to hear people say things. And it, to your point, Paul, I would say 30% of the people that talk to us now are like, well, you have a tracking company now. When are you getting a trailer full of 8 cars? And I just think, one thing at a time.
I mean,
okay, this is a very expensive reality.
Idea.
I still love the idea, but I'm not sure where that money comes from, but I do love that it's possible.
For sure. Some HOD news coming up Saturday, April 27th and Sunday, April 28th, 2024 is at Homestead Miami Speedway in Homestead, Florida. Mm-hmm. That's Saturday and Sunday. It is a famous NASCAR track combined with the infield circuit. So you get 3+ hours of track time per day. Go to hookedondriving.com and go to the Florida Southeast region so you can see more details there and register to sign up your car. If you've never been, quite a track. Hookedondriving.com to see registration. And if you've got a desire to go to track day in your area, you can find something on the calendar.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Whatever car you're looking for and wherever it's listed, you'll find it with AutoTempest.com. AutoTempest.com brings together results from all the top used car listings anywhere online to save you time and help you find the perfect car. It even lets you compare with nationwide results from Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and far beyond your local area.
Plus, you can now get email alerts for your search, so you're sure not to miss anything. You can even price and find new cars from nearby dealers. That's why AutoTempest is now the official sponsor of all our test drive videos. We use it to search for new cars or used cars wherever they are.
So when you're doing your drive homework or you're chasing your next family car or you're just browsing so you can see what's out there, go to AutoTempest.com/everyday so they know we sent you. AutoTempest. All the cars, one search. It is a topic Tuesday because it's Tuesday. You see how that works? We may get to a car debate, but never know how some of these topic Tuesdays are going to go lengthwise. So there may be a car debate coming. There are a few questions from you guys. Thank you for that. The topic Tuesday today is really interesting. It is one of those things we asked for it and you delivered. You guys have been sending us topics, which is great. So this is the first one of topics you guys have sent. This is top 10 personal favorite cars we've driven for the show, which is only 17 years in running. Top 10 cars we've driven and why. And I actually revised this further.
Oh, you did? Okay. Okay.
I didn't include anything I bought because I feel like that's obvious. The GR86. I could list the Lotus Elise. True. You know I love these cars. I also owned them and still like them. So I didn't include them. I went with stuff I do fair, not own or enough. Did not buy.
This question is from Drew Douglas. Drew, thank you for the topic Tuesday and the idea. He's asking if these cars hold up over time. Did they surprise us? Mm. Are they the cars that we lust for? And are they just the current best in their respective categories? Which made me look at the list. I had to cull it down to from 39 cars, but I made it a top 11 for me.
Okay? I made a top 11 as well.
Did you really?
I have 11 You're as serious? Well. Yes, I have 11 too.
Maybe that's the new thing. It's the top 11.
This one goes to 11.
Yes.
For all of you Spinal Tap fans out there, this one goes to, but this one goes to 11. Anyway, yeah, here's our top 11, ladies and gentlemen.
It's top 11 for everything now, isn't it? Well, I'm looking at the through line at my list, and I'm trying to decide what that looks like. And by the way, everybody, there are Porsches on my list, but I will
Shocker.
I will tell you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 5 that I left off of my top 11.
That were Porsches.
I left off in a deliberate, concerted effort to not include. So I only
I like
have
it. Well done.
4 Porsches on my list.
Wow, look at you.
But the rest are not.
Okay.
And I love this question because it got us thinking way back to the genesis of the show. And we started out with normal cars. And through my entire list of 39, there's a lot of normal cars on here, but they're not normal. They're actually brilliant cars to drive. Stand and they're all price ranges.
Okay, good.
I mean, number 36 on my list. I'll just give you an example.
Number 36 on Paul's list of 10. Wait a minute, that doesn't
my
work.
My top 11 list.
I'm not good at math, but that's not right. Okay.
I put the Tesla Model S when we first drove it a decade ago.
Yeah.
That was a significant car, I felt like, for you and I to drive the first Model S. Mm-hmm. And that was very significant because it is still kind of the best in its respective categories, Drew. I don't lust for it, but it did surprise us when we drove it.
True. Yeah, yeah.
It was certainly interesting to drive and think, you know what? This is really going to push on the whole car industry.
Mm-hmm.
This just works. It was really quite astounding to drive at the time. But I'll jump right in with car number 1 is the Acura NSX. These are alphabetical, by the way.
Oh, see, mine are just mixed up randomly.
I had to alphabetize the list.
Okay, like it. Of course you did.
So the first gen Acura NSX, and this through line that I'm noticing in my list here is a lot of cars that I just had to have when I was really into cars in high school and college. I mean, I've always been into cars, but you know what I mean? First started the ability to drive and I could drive and realize like, oh my gosh, if only one day I could drive these cars. They're cars that I lusted after as a kid. I looked up to. I would always read articles on them. And that first gen NSX turned the industry on its head by being such an accessible Ferrari is what it turned out to be. And it's still, to this day, one of the best in its categories, even though it doesn't have the specs to compete against modern cars.
Yeah.
Why does everybody lust after the first-gen NSX, and why are their prices so high? Mm. The Porsche 911 thing is happening to those cars in a gradual way, not as crazy of a level, but still. I put this car on my list because then finally we got to drive it, and I couldn't believe it. We got to drive two.
We got to drive two. They did a mid-cycle refresh where it changed slightly in engine and in transmission, and a lot of little things were tweaked. And I have it on my list as well.
The first
gen NSX. Absolutely, because that was a car that when it first came out, I was not quite the car geek I am now, but I was a car geek. And I was one of the people, because I'm a teenager, right? I barely even drive yet. And I looked down at it. I was like, what is that? it's not a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. Or
initially,
what
you looked down
on it? I was like, what on earth is that? And then a friend of mine's father bought one.
No
Had
kidding.
The first one ever seen. Of course, unfortunately, it was silver. And I remember when I first saw it, I was like, well, I'm too bad that it's silver, but that's really cool. Okay, this is Texas, okay, in the 80s, all right? This friend's father, they literally had put a oil well on one of their random pieces of Texas property, and it had struck.
Because
so all of
course.
A sudden, on the back half of high school, they had money. And so dad went out and bought himself an NSX, and they had just come out.
Oh my gosh. This is late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, exactly. Huh? Yeah. Very late 80s, early 90s. And I remember the first one I ever saw was his, and I was like, huh. And it caused me to like reset myself and go look into what this car was about. And then I was like, well, that is really cool. But my first impression, because of just kind of seeing headlines and seeing photos, I was like, that doesn't matter.
Is it because it wasn't a Ferrari?
Because it was an Acura supercar. Well, you've got to be kidding. It wasn't a Ferrari. I mean, a teenager. I'm barely driving,
but
okay?
That kind of thinking still pervades among adults.
Absolutely.
If it's not a Ferrari,
absolutely.
I can only pronounce Ferrari, and all supercars are just Ferrari.
So then jump forward to where I'm lusting after the Nissan 300ZX. Not on my list because I've owned two, okay?
Fair.
Lusting after the 300ZX. But then I kept going, the NSX would be cool. And then when we finally drove one, I was like, this may be the only other car of that era that I would personally want to buy is the NSX.
And here you've had two.
I've had two 300ZXs, yeah.
That's amazing.
But the
That's
NSX
cool.
is cool. just such a great car. I would love to own a pristine one. You're right. The prices are going way, way up. But they are very, very cool cars.
They dipped slightly. 911s dipped slightly. They dipped for a while. And then everybody realized, you know, the price should be higher. And they... kind of went way higher. And so the NSX, that's happening to the good ones, of course. In alphabetical order, I'm moving on to the letter B for BMW.
Okay.
We've driven a lot.
Yes.
We've been fortunate to drive all the M3s. We've driven so many.
Look at our Icon film where we drove all the, onward, yes.
So many that are good that we have liked elements of, but the standout is the 1M, the BMW 1M.
Also on my list.
Really?
Yes. In fact, it's the only BMW on my list.
It's the only BMW on my list, but I liked it when you coined the term a few years ago of moment in time cars.
Absolutely.
And this absolutely holds that. That's the poster child of moment in time cars. Mm-hmm. We identified that era as the 2011-2012, and I keep coming up with the moment in time cars, and you know what was included on that list is the Cadillac V-Series wagon. That's not on my list, but I'm just...
Was that same era, too?
It was the same era, 2012.
What was going on 2011 and 2012 in the car industry? Because there are actually three cars on my list from that era.
Are there really?
Mm-hmm. And the BMW 1M is one of them, yeah.
What a tool shed kind of car.
Yes, it's a Frankenstein beast.
BMW is so proud of that thing. Mm-hmm. Every car since then has tried to capture elements. Every M car, I feel like, has tried to capture elements of what that rowdy, irreverent little beast is. And the prices have gone crazy on those.
I would own one tomorrow.
But yeah.
Yeah. They're so, such good cars.
So cool. Cool to drive. Quirky. Weird looking. Ugly from the wrong angle. Cool.
Ugly from the right angle. I mean, that's honestly, true. It's a bulldog of a car. Mm-hmm. You know how you look at a bulldog and you look at a bulldog and you have one or two impressions. Like, objectively, not an attractive animal. Mm-hmm. I mean, objectively, many of you with bulldogs now are typing furiously, but objectively, bulldogs are not attractive. They actually get into that category of so unattractive they might become cute again. Because then there's also the thing, bulldogs are like, oh, he's so cute. You look at it like, not really.
It can't breathe.
But it's so bulky and odd looking that it kind of becomes attractive again. This is the reality of the BMW 1M. The one series of that era was actually also unsung, but the one series of that era was not a great looking BMW. And it was right on the tail of the E46 M3. They dropped that one series, and it's like, what happened in the styling studio? Because the E46 is an icon. It's so spectacular.
It is, yes.
And then you follow that up with the E90, which is also very good looking. And here comes this one series, and it's like, that's a bit odd by comparison. So then, but here's the great thing about the 1M, is that you have still the great hydraulic BMW steering, which was just on the cusp of about to go away. But it's still in the 1M.
True.
You've got the running gear of the larger M3, the E90 M3, that somebody was like, could we put all that over here in the smaller car?
Yeah.
And they figured it out, which is inexplicable. And also, you would think, if this being the recipe, this can't possibly work. It's going to be unpredictable. It's not going to work very well. There's going to be stuff that breaks all the time. And yet it just all works. You've said it before. And I agree with it in this point. This is one of those cars that is much more than the sum of its parts. If you look at what they did, you're like, oh, that might be interesting. It might be cool. You drive it, you go, oh, yes, please.
It's the automotive equivalent of those ad campaigns that are so stupid, they're actually successful.
You can't possibly forget the product because you've seen that ad.
It's such a dumb idea that it actually kind of works and it's memorable. And actually, that was more successful than some normal idea. That's why it works so well. But to recapture that magic, I don't know what BMW would have to do to recapture that car, but I don't know if they could. It's such a weird beast. Let's move on to number three. On my list is a Ferrari. Now, we have not driven all the Ferraris that have ever existed.
We have driven very few, actually, but
that's okay. But the Testarossa is on my list.
Not surprised.
I really, really like that car.
I know you do.
What an icon. What the strakes, the side strakes. I don't know what else to call them.
It's 80s in a car.
It is the 1980s in a car.
Yep.
Well, so is the next car on my list, which is a Countach.
Okay, all right.
The two classic Testarossa and Countach. I stared at those cars the whole time I was growing up.
Sure.
I just stared at them, and every emotion that you get about what would happen. I mean, I did have that poster, the whole
justification for higher education.
I had that poster with the Countach and the Ferrari on it.
Who made that poster? And are they rich for life? Because that poster was in everyone's bedroom. It was ridiculous.
I mean, this was the Robin Leach era with lifestyles of the rich and famous. I can't even do the accent, but you're hearing it in your head. And the people who had these cars just sort of had life by the tail. They just kind of knew.
They wore white suits and pink t-shirts.
then they made a show about that.
Going on,
But they just sort of kind of, every subject, and they could talk about every subject, and they were knowledgeable in every area.
That's the impression the poster gave you, isn't it? Yes, it is.
You just know a lot about everything.
That person that owns that house is the most interesting person in the room.
Seriously.
Yes.
And this is manifested in automobiles. The doors on both cars, one has strakes, the other flip up.
Yep.
Scissor doors.
Yeah, sure.
Such iconic. I mean, that it's seared into my mind.
I get it. Yep.
Don't worry, DeLorean's not on my list. If we're talking doors, don't worry.
Yeah, fair.
Whew. But the Testarossa and the Countach.
I love it.
What icons. And we've been able and fortunate to drive these cars, privately owned, for two different reasons in the show. I wish we had more time in the Countach. But then it's not just car, it's all the surroundings, it's all the mechanical, the money that has to go in it that you as a kid never think about.
Sure. Yeah.
They just run perfectly and will always run perfectly. Tires, what do you mean tires cost money?
That car comes with a supermodel, right? This is teenage boy thinking. If I have that car, it just comes with a supermodel in the passenger seat. That's just how that works.
It's an easy jump. 1 + 1 = 2. That was my thinking, certainly. And I love both of these cars. They're seared into my memory. And the driving experience of both is not easily forgotten. They're just cool cars. So yes, they're still ones that I lust for. They're still very collectible. Yes, they surprised me. I liked the Testarossa, but I guess I didn't really like driving the Countach. It was like driving a truck in a wedge shape. It was like a doorstop-shaped truck.
Yeah, I hear you. All right.
And I'd rather be looking at the Countach but then be driving it.
Interesting. Okay.
It was thrashy and mechanical, and it wasn't refined, and I guess that's part of the charm. But
I'd love to drive another example and be able to drive it a lot harder for a lot longer. We had a very nervous owner with us.
Yeah, agreed.
Which is understandable because it's a Countach.
Brand new, newly built clutch and a lot of like $25,000 worth of work that had just been done. And he was like, easy guys, can we not have it shipped back across the country to the Lambo dealer again? Like, okay. So yeah, those two are my 3 and 4, the Testarossa and the Countach.
That's good. I'll throw down a couple here. I have them in no order other than the fact that I got toward the ones that I wanted to wax poetic about later. But I have to say that one of the things about a lot of these is there are good follow-up questions here, by the way, Drew. You said, what are the ones that surprised us? Did they all surprise us? No, but the first couple that I list definitely were surprises because I approached them like, uh-huh. And then I drove them and was like, I want one. And the first one is the Ram TRX.
Oh my gosh.
It's on my list.
Seriously.
It's not like the first thing I want, but on my top 10 personals, I have to put it on there because we've driven a lot of trucks. We've driven a lot of crazy trucks, but it's the truck that I just inexplicably want. It's like, if I'm going to go truck, it's going to have to be this obnoxious. And also because we've driven powerful trucks and other things before. And I got into the Ram TRX with that kind of, okay, here we go. Kind of, you know, eye roll, yeah. Like whatever. And then I got to the block, was like, oh, now wait. Hang on.
What's this?
This is quite cool. And then I got on the freeway and floored it and heard the, you know, the Hellcat supercharger happen, which I'd heard in many, many other vehicles at that point. And the big truck, you know, like settling down and, you know, whoop, you know. I thought, I need this. And I don't. There's no part of me, but I'm looking in the rearview mirror going, I could put bikes back there. Okay. This is one of the biggest surprises in my 10 years of doing the show. And then we took it to sand dunes and jumped it because we could.
Off the showroom floor.
Just jumped it. And so to be in a sand dune area that is normally used by UTVs, okay? Yeah, UTVs are much better built for this than trucks. To take this 6,000-pound truck, point it in a sand dune, and give it all of my right foot. And just know.
The noise, the sound, the fury.
But just know that I'm going to be airborne shortly.
The hang time.
And it's going to be fine. My only concern while launching myself off a dune was, how low is the drone, and where are Paul and Chance standing? Otherwise, there were no concerns. I'm currently airborne thinking, oh, yeah, they're clear. That's fine. So, yeah, Ram TRX has got to be on my list because you've got to be kidding.
Surely. I think it's one of the documentation in the packet of things that you sign when you buy a car. With the TRX, I think there's a document, a sheet in there you sign that says, I promise to jump this truck.
I hope so. It's got jump detection.
Yeah.
May as well use it. Otherwise, that's a wasted feature.
What am I signing? It's like when you buy a house, you know, like everything you sign. I promise to jump my new truck. What am I signing here?
the salesperson keeps telling you what the docs are about.
Exactly.
This is the promise to jump. The what now? I'm sorry.
Jump? You're kidding me.
The other car that was a total surprise for me, and it's such a surprise for me that I've tried to convince my wife and she's not having any of it. Fiesta ST.
What?
That's on my top 10 list.
What now?
The Fiesta ST is awesome.
It is awesome.
But every time I've ever
driven it. Well, your top 11 list.
Yes, top 11. Every time I've ever driven it, I'm like, yeah, this is just great. And here's and again, back to the surprise thing. I first read about it before we drove it. I read an in-depth article about everything that Ford did to tear it down and build it back up into a rally car. And it was this incredible love letter to the engineers and the engineering of the car. And I thought, it's an awful lot of work to put into Fiesta. And I thought, all right, we'll put it on the list. We'll drive it, but it's a Fiesta. And then I drove it and was like, there's other than the fact this is cheap, but of course it's cheap because it's built in a Fiesta, there's absolutely zero wrong with this. And I just want to keep driving it. And I'd happily own one. And I'd throw stuff in the back and I wouldn't be precious with it. And I would hoon myself everywhere. So to come, like with the TRX, full circle.
Wow.
Well, I should say full 180 from just like, Fiesta to I must have one. That was the other one on my list on the top 10 because the Fiesta ST wowed me.
Amazing. All right. I'm going to keep going here. And I admit to being susceptible to expensive things. Mm-hmm. I admit that.
Yes, you are.
My mother always told me that I had champagne taste on a beer budget. And I never knew what that meant until I grew up and started.
An adult went, oh.
Like, I want that. Nope, I can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was right.
Dang it, Mom.
She identified that trait early in my life. I don't know why I was into watch. I was a watch nerd in like sixth grade. All right. I was totally into watches then and bought a Swatch and all this stuff. So I was into it. And, you know, the brands that I would discover and tell her about, she'd just roll her eyes. So I can hear everybody else rolling their eyes. And I hate to be a foregone conclusion, but the through line are cars that have so much that it makes me want to be a better driver, a better person, a better, well, not a better person.
You feel like you need to elevate. I get it.
I need to elevate my game. I need to learn. I can't just come in swagger and say, okay, I got this. I know how to do this, which I feel like is many supercar owners that say, I got this. No, you don't. Because these have such...
WreckedExotics.com, everybody.
Exactly. Just Instagram. But they have such a high level of engineering expertise. They have such a high bar to attain. That's what's in my life that I've always looked at. Hot cars that have a lot of performance, but not every driver can extract that. But it doesn't mean it's not fun for me. I want to attain that level. I want to get to be a better driver where I know the object is under my control and I'm not just there as a passenger. I'm not just along for the ride, which is why I don't like all the nannies. I don't like all the stuff, even though some of the Porsches kind of do make you a better driver. We said that about the E92 M3 when we first drove it a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this car just makes you a better driver. How is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a lot of engineering. It's a lot of expert input into from the fine tuning of the car by expert drivers and you know, racecraft engineering. So number five on my list is the Artura, the McLaren Artura. You know, if we're talking about doors, these are not scissor doors. These are dihedral doors. So it's even a cool word.
I'm not surprised this is on your list.
Doors. All. I'm all about the doors. I know. Style too. A lot of it is style. And I like that this feels for the first time ever a car that I could actually, I mean, I can't, but I could attain, you know, it's the lowest level of welcome to McLaren. Here's your, you know, here's my first Sony. Here you go.
Yeah, sure.
But I felt like it's still worthy of the McLaren name, yet I could almost get there maybe one day. I could maybe own one of these.
Sure, why not? Uh-huh.
But that really made a big impression on me because the feeling of driving it was right in between Porsche and Lotus.
Okay, I see that. And I agree with that, actually. Yeah, it feels like the middle ground. The things you like about Porsche, the things I like about Lotus, elevated out of both, becomes a McLaren product. I do see that for sure.
And that's just the beginning level. I expect greater things from every McLaren on up from there. But I believe it's there. Everybody raves about McLarens. I mean, people are talking about them being robotic, and I think prior ones were. We've not driven all the McLarens, but that Artura was a thorough drive. It wasn't track driving, but it was a thorough long drive for both of us, and we really liked it. It made my list. Because of the doors, because of the style, but because of how it drove. It just elicited such emotion from me as I was driving.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very cool car. I'm a huge McLaren fan. I hope we get to drive a lot more of their new product line.
Agreed. Agreed. What else you got on the list?
Well, let's see. I will list my first of two Porsches. You know what? I'll list
Porsches
both
on your
my
list?
I have two Porsches on my list.
Well, knock me over.
I know. And look, we did our 50 years of the 911, believe it or not, 10 plus years ago we did that film because we just passed the 60th year of the 911. So we can do math. So we've driven a lot of Porsches. We've driven, look, a lot of the super Porsches and all kinds of stuff. And I have to admit, I've been very blessed to drive so many of the cars that we have. I can't believe how many Porsche products we've driven. Our friends at RSR have loaned us a lot of great cars. We've had a lot of great experience in Porsche product. As you probably have guessed, in spite of my burgeoning Cayenne collection, I am not the first person to lead on you must buy a Porsche. But there are two that I
You're
would...
not waving the flag, I get it.
There are two Porsche cars that I would put in my garage if I could, because when I drove them, they exceeded my expectations. And they had something beyond just Porsche-ness. I was like, this is an extra little thing. And one was... when we drove, and it was a little bit tuned, so I have to acknowledge that, the first gen 987 Boxster Spider.
2011 car.
Exactly.
The moment in time
car. The one
car
we drove had been slightly lightened. It weighed like 2,800 pounds, and it had some sort of tune on it. I forget what it was. And I believe they had done something to revise the gearbox. And I wish I had the list in front of me. You can watch it on our channel. You can watch us talk about it. That car was glorious. I was not a dedicated Spider person. I like the 987 Boxster and Cayman very, very much, and I would recommend them to anyone, but they're not a car I would buy, with the exception of that Boxster Spider set up like that. That car was like, okay, yes, I could see myself owning this. I could get used to the dedicated Spider life. That was the one with a ridiculous top that's barely a top. Like, it's a fruit roll-up that connects to hooks. Yeah, it was terrible. So that one is one of them. And then the other one, there are other... there's other big Porsches we've driven, okay?
Yeah.
The GT2 RS was impressive. That's not on my list, but I mean, very impressive. The new GT3 I've mentioned many, many times, the new GT3 RS is pretty much just the track car you should buy. If you want a track car, just go buy that one. All of these are good, but they're not on my top 10 list because what is, I think it's also a 2011 car, but it's the 997 GT3 RS40.
It's a 2011 car.
We drove that at the end of our 50 years of 911 film. And we had, keep in mind, this was the last car we drove.
Yeah.
We had driven 911s all week.
Mm-hmm.
And the weekend prior, we drove 10 more that weren't featured in the film.
Yeah.
So we had been steeped in 911s for a week.
Stewed it.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So to get into that 4.0 and to feel that it was special beyond the rest of them, I was like, there's something here. Also, the 997 happens to be my favorite generation of the 911s, just size-wise and refinement-wise. I think they get too big after that. GT3 RS40. They're worth like $500,000 now. I'll never have one, but we got to have a couple days with it, and it was glorious. And that's on my list.
That car left a big impression on you. I really liked it too.
Big time, yeah.
And I'll get to Porsche in just a moment here. But number six comes in for the Mercedes AMG GT. Not the current one, the brand new one, 2024, but the first generation, really, the AMG GT.
That's a good one. That's a good one. It's a very good car, yeah.
That is automotive styling excellence.
Okay.
It's such a classic proportion and shape, long hood GT. I just simply love how that car looks, and it's brilliant to drive, and you feel like the most important person on the planet when you drive it.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel important. You feel like you've made it. You feel like the poster.
Yeah, I see that. I totally get that.
You feel like that when you're driving it. It's not a manual. Mm-hmm. There's imperfect things about it. They're just beautiful, modern sculpture, and they are fast. And they're well-built, and they sound cool, and they look cool. And you just keep turning your head when you see one, like, wow, those are cool.
Anytime I see one on the road, it turns my head. It doesn't matter which version. It doesn't matter what color. That car has presence. Just presence. Moving through traffic, yes. It has presence. On the track, it's good to drive. And also, nobody watching won't see a person for days. I would drive cross-country in it. That's a great, great car. I'm not surprised it's on your list. It's very good.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
All right, the first Porsche here is one you mentioned, actually two of them. It is the late 991 generation 911 GT2 RS.
Yeah, it's a good car. Almost made my list.
Did it really?
Yeah, it's up there. Because the reason it almost made my list is because I was astonished to drive something 700 horsepower that was so easy to drive quickly.
Yes, that's a big part of it for me. But the main reason was the handling feel of that car.
It was excellent. It was very good.
Is hands down the best handling feel and feedback I've ever felt from any Porsche ever.
Wow, that's big. That's big.
A lot of it is because of how they've used the bushings. They were not this, you know, standard urethane or rubber. They were, in some cases, aluminum. It was kind of a race car kind of steering feel. It was different than most. And you keep thinking, like, how do they make every generation and every variation 911 different? You just have to come to a reality in your life. Somehow they do. And it's true.
just accept and go with it.
Just accept these facts. The second Porsche of the four is the current 992 911 GT3 RS. The fact that this is such a capable car, the limits are so high, and it introduces aero at such a high level, and it makes me want to be a better driver.
I can see that.
Yet it already pulls a lot out of your average driver, but the great drivers can make it dance. Mm. And that's what I want to do with that car.
Okay, I see. It's I totally get that. That's aspiration. I can't argue that at all. Yeah.
It's like it is a race car that you can drive on the street.
Yeah, I see it.
If you're driving it on the street, you're doing it wrong, but it still feels fun.
Still special. Please take it to a track.
Yeah. Those are the first two Porsches. All right, go.
That's very good. That's excellent stuff. I'm going to go with two sedans.
Okay.
Two different sedans made my list. One is the Evo 10. I continue to love that car. Now, that was the other thing that connects these two cars is they were both cars that I was fascinated by before I drove them.
Okay.
Right.
The Evo 10, we first started the show, was on my list of cars. It would be super cool if the show allowed us to drive. I was like totally about, what is this? Okay. Then when we were doing the show and the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio comes out, I saw a first picture of the Alfa Giulia and was like, that's really pretty. Let's hope it drives well. And then I started reading about it. Engine kind of related to Ferrari, all this horsepower is supposed to sound really cool. I sat in one at the LA Auto Show a year before they actually released it, and we actually got in one. I was like, this is even cool to sit here. The Evo 10, to this day, is the way I want my all-wheel drive winter beater to be. I would own one. I had a Lancer Sportback. It blew up. Anyway, you know, but
it was not well taken care of.
The Evo 10... Yeah. In manual transmission, sadly, it's still a 5-speed, but I would still own one of those cars. That I would still like that to be my winter beater. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The trunk is tiny, but I just love that car. That is, for me, if this makes sense, the Evo 10 is to all-wheel drive sedans what the Lotus is to other sports cars. It's the more raw, more aggressive, can't believe this drives this well. I just, every time I drive an Evo 10, I go, yeah, I really want one. So that is on my list. And I mean, we drove one early on in the show. It was one of our very first press cars was an Evo 10. I couldn't believe it. That was back in like 09. We drove an Evo 10. One of our second or third press car ever, which is fascinating. And then we jumped like 5 years later, we were back in one against the GTR. And that was fascinating again. Every time I've been in one, love it. So the Evo 10.
I have a prediction to make about unmodified Evo 10s. The same thing as that has happened to the first gen NSXs is going to happen to that car.
Because you're not going to be able to find one unmodified? Yeah.
That, and because of all the elements you're talking about, the characteristics that make it such a great car to drive, that it will be remembered, and then stock ones will be so highly valued, we're going to see $50,000, maybe $80,000 Evo 10s that are unmodified with low mileage, and everybody will shake their head and somebody's going to buy it.
Barrett Jackson's going to happen. I agree. The other one for me on this category is the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio.
Really?
Yes. Here's the thing. If you said to me right now, go buy a performance four-door sedan, it's top of my list. That's why it has to be on here. If I'm not worried about the financials, I just go buy a Giulia Quadrifoglio. Be very happy.
True.
Sound is amazing. Rear wheel drive, great tight steering. But sitting still, work of art.
It is beautiful.
So Giulia Quadrifoglio is my other sedan. I really love that car. And it was one of those that both the Evo and the Giulia are in a category where I liked them before I drove them and sat down just about to start them. I'm like, please don't disappoint me. Please don't disappoint me. And then they exceeded what I was hoping for. Got to be on the
amazing.
List.
Amazing. Okay, continuing with Porsche, moving right along.
Paul's back to Porsche. Surprise!
You might think I would have a Cayman on my list, and I did the same thing you did. None of the cars that I've owned or bought.
I feel like that's obvious. That's the extra stuff on the list. Agreed. Beyond our 11. Yeah.
But it isn't a Cayman. It's the first genesis of the Cayman. It is the Canepa Porsche 914 modified.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to Griot's Garage for letting us drive the Jag E-Type Speedster that became Speedsters. That was the genesis of that whole line of cars, and this 914 with a 930 motor, and it was turned backwards to fit because it's a mid-engine car, and this was a special build. I believe it had gone back to Canepa, and I'm pretty sure it got stripped and is being rebuilt or was in the process of being rebuilt, even though it didn't need it. The roof was chopped 2 inches.
Which was not good for me.
Which was not good. It didn't make sense, but it fixed the proportions of the car. It made it look good.
It made it look really cool. Yeah.
It had a $50,000 paint job by one of the leading paint artists that have ever painted cars. That was our understanding.
Not sure why they picked black, but it was gorgeous.
Yeah,
it was gorgeous.
I'd rather have a color and metal fender flares. So actual metal work. It was a spectacular build. And just so fun to drive. It was so light, and it was everything that I love about a Cayman in its most pure, raw, old, classic feel that I could possibly drive.
That's very good. And it's interesting you brought that up, because on my list is the other car from that shoot. Richard Griot's Eagle Speedster E-Type. I've driven a couple of E-Types, thankfully. Again, this was the car that started it all for me. Watch our inspiration piece on our YouTube channel. It was one of our TV episodes. Paul gets to drive a Testarossa for the first time. I get to drive an E-Type for the first time. It's a fantastic piece. It's really, really fun. We talk about the genesis, the inspiration of our car love and connected to those two cars. It's one of my very favorite pieces we did because we're little kids in it the entire time. It's really, really very fun. And I like the E-Type very much. And I mentioned it in the piece, Richard Grio's Eagle Speedster E-Type that he's since sold, unfortunately, but not to me. Anyway, that was very similar to what happens now to the Eagle E-Types. That is kind of like the Singer, if you want to think. Yeah. Singer to 911, that's what Eagle is to E-Types. There were like little 5, 10% tweaks throughout that car. Ergonomics, shifter, placement of the door handles, little tiny tweak, like
I
not
think
much.
Richard had done.
He had it done to fit him.
Yeah.
And he happens to be about the same size as us.
Yeah.
And the best word I can think of for driving that car was it was just sublime. Yeah. It was like the warm bath experience. It was just like, I don't want to get out of this because this, I don't need to go fast. I could go fast. I passed that person. I hit triple digits in that car. Don't need to. Don't
yeah.
care.
Yeah.
I could drive this corner slowly. I could sit here by a lake in a turnout and just watch the sunset and be perfectly happy. That car was so much fun. And it was the E-Type tweaked just enough to elevate it. And I like the E-Type anyway, but that's the one that I was just like, top 10, oh yes.
Mm. All right, number 10 on my list is again a Porsche. It's the 959. Every time I see it, it's not that it's the most fun to drive necessarily. It's the car that set Porsche. It was their first supercar.
Yeah.
And putting so much technology and the fact that a car could do everything that it did at the time period when Porsche built these things, because you keep digging into specs and you find out, well, the floor is Kevlar. Really? Well, it's a twin turbo, all-wheel drive, 450 horsepower supercar that they built out of a 911, kinda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With weird fender flares that the styling has proved timeless. It's still very in its era, but it's certainly timeless. And we've driven one now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best handling car. It's sure, not the sure, quickest sure. accelerating car, but it has a magic about it. Because of all
I'll
the tech,
you're right.
It grabs me every time I see one. Of course, the Canepa builds are spectacular. They've rebuilt the entire car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Used even better parts. They've upgraded it. I would just take a stock one, just a regular old 959. I see it and I just want it. I just want that manifestation the car love, the emotions that I felt when I looked at it as a kid. And here we've driven one. And like I said, it's not that it's the best of everything. It was just the best in its time. Mm. And it was sort of like the granddaddy of supercars. And it really, Porsche was already on the map as a manufacturer.
Sure.
You know, providing race cars. But this 959 made it accessible, even though they only built less than 300. You know what I mean? It was just, it seemed like there was a connection.
But it's a watershed
to
moment
normal
as well.
People.
Because they took, if you will, the accessible car in the 911. And then they put on it, if you want to think about it, so much tech that followed in the 20 years after that car and became commonplace in supercars.
Yeah.
The sequential dual turbos, not something you see very often, but man, is it amazing in that car. But all-wheel drive, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
What? Nobody was making all-wheel drive supercars at that time. It's like, what are you doing with all-wheel drive?
Exactly.
But look at what's happened to the supercar world since the 959. It's a major turning point. I see that. I get it.
Believe me, I left off a lot of Porsches.
I'm sure you did.
I mean,
I'm proud of you, actually.
I'll tell you some cars from 12 to 39, but
we don't have that kind of time, but it's good.
I left off a lot of other Porsches. All right, go. What else is on your list?
Two left.
Okay.
10 and 11. All right. 10 might surprise you until I explain it, but as I came across it, I literally was going back through our entire back catalog, and I was like, that one has to be on the list, and I had such a short time with it. But we're talking about personal favorite cars we've driven that made a big impression, and I was like, I can't leave it off. The Caterham 620R.
That's on my list. That's number 20 on my list.
All right, this Caterham 620R. This is the step beyond my Lotus. And it was the step beyond my Lotus that I loved, but also realized this is a step past me. It was the step where I realized I actually don't want this, but I'm so glad it exists and I would drive it anytime I had the opportunity. It's like I want my tracking buddy to have one, so every time we go to the track, I can borrow it. I don't want it in my garage. I'm not going to drive it enough.
Okay.
I'm never going to take it to run errands, which I do in the Lotus. Which I love about the Elise. I'm never going to take it to run errands or do pickup or none of that. But I'd love to have access to one at a track. But I don't really want to. You know what? You buy it. And I will drive it anytime you bring it out. That was I loved that Caterham 620R. Also because the other
great
reason that it's difficult for me is because I really, really don't fit. It was an uncomfortable car to drive, but glorious to drive. I remember going through corners and forget figuring out where the apex is. You could watch the tire hit it.
Yeah, true.
You're down there.
That's true.
Level with the tire.
You can see the suspension articulate, the tire hit it, and you can actually see what's under the tire.
And what's crazy, you know how they tell you, if you've ever driven on a racetrack, and you can with Hooked on Driving, I have to get the plug in, but you know, they talk about looking through the corner to the next corner, okay? Well, if you're in a car, especially a car that gets high, okay, you aren't necessarily visually, your visual information isn't really being taken in on the current corner you're passing because you're looking at the next one.
Right.
In the Caterham, what's amazing is the corner I'm going through right now is in the bottom of my vision with the tire hitting the apex, while in the far distance of my vision is the next corner. That visibility is amazing to just dial it in. I had so much fun driving it. Has to be on my list.
It's a split-screen sports car.
Kind of. That's excellent. My last car on my list is two cars because they're related. The Evora and the Amira.
Okay. All right.
They are related cars. The Amira is a revision of the Evora, and I've only driven the Amira once. So I can't really speak to it as, well, every time I've driven, I can't say that, okay? But the Evora, every time I drove it in any spec, I got out going, why don't these sell like crazy? Why is Lotus having trouble letting people know? I think that for the first decade, I can't believe I'm saying this, for the first decade of the Evora, the automotive journalist industry slept on that car.
I agree to that.
It came out and it was like, it's not powerful enough. They put a supercharger on it, journalists were like, I don't really
agreed.
Want that.
It just, the specs and aren't there. It can't possibly be
all
good.
Of a sudden, when it got to GT, all the automotive journalists found it. Like, did you know that the GT was this good? I was like, yes, hello, hi. It's a revision of a car that was great 10 years ago. The base one was good. The supercharger one was better. The 400 improved that. By the time you got to the GT, it was like, this is a fantastic car to drive. And the Amira is a revision of that. So I'm including it, but I guess the one on the list is actually Evora.
That's really awesome. Number 11 on the top 11 list.
This one goes to 11.
It's the Wolf F1 car.
That's excellent.
Again, thanks to our friends at Griot's Garage. This was part of their collection. It was the 1978 Wolf car that is included as the pinnacle car in our Road to F1 piece. Now a couple
on
of years.
YouTube. Yeah.
It's on YouTube. It's the number 20 car that was campaigned by Jody Scheckter. He went on to win the F1 championship, the world championship, the following year with Ferrari.
Yeah. He could drive a little bit, a little faster than you and I.
Homeboy could drive.
Yeah.
And this was his car for the 1978 season. Wolf is still in business. They're still making chassis.
Amazing, yeah.
I never thought, growing up, ever doing this show, that we would have ever gotten in a Formula One car, a real F1 car of any year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a modern car, but it is a true race car.
And we worked our way up. If you haven't seen that piece, it's a really fun piece. We worked our way up from essentially just after karts. Mm-hmm. We did the equivalent of Formula Ford, Formula 2, and Formula 1, essentially is what we did. We worked our way up. Also, keep in mind, these are cars from the 70s. So this was the era where you had three pedals and you had to shift yourself.
Yes, yes.
Talk about complicating your life. In a car that weighs less than my Lotus and has about three times the horsepower. And by the way, you have to shift. And the shift motion, you can't see my hand. The shift motion is like a half inch toward every gear.
Yeah.
It was this little tiny shifter that was like half the length of a pen.
Yeah.
And you moved it about a half inch in any direction for a new gear. You had to take your hand off the wheel, which was the last thing you wanted to do, by the way. This is the last thing you want to do is take your head off the wheel, to put it on the shifter, to like blink it toward the next shifter and try not to blow the engine. When the guy in the pit, you have to watch this piece, when the guy in the pit says, don't let the engine get below 5,000 RPM or it'll die. I'm like, below 5,000?
Yeah, it
has to stay above 5,000 to run?
Yeah, and,
are you
and
kidding?
Don't take it over 11. I'm sorry,
anyway,
what?
Yeah, that was a crazy day. I'm glad you included it because that was really iconic.
That will never leave me.
That's very good.
That ability to drive that car, to have access, everything hit home in a single moment.
Mm.
Not only were we being trusted for this.
True. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, don't screw up.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the
Richard was
the
listening
headline.
For over revs from the paddock.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was listening. He was
counting.
Because
we're the only ones on track. You can hear like, the car could, anywhere on track.
I came in at one point and went, you missed a shift, didn't you? What? I went, yes, Richard, I missed a shift. Yes, I did.
I know. So this car, the experience of being trusted with it,
mm-hmm.
on real slick tires,
yes.
wide F1 tires.
Yes.
The car has history and provenance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's old, but racing still applies. Racing throughout time applies. And this was the era where safety was an afterthought. Your feet are the crash zone.
Absolutely.
There's nothing around you except fuel tanks on each side.
Yep.
So it was the dangerous era.
Absolutely.
It was lighter and smaller than any modern F1 car. So to me, it was an even greater, more thrilling experience than a modern F1 car with true safety gear that I actually embrace and would like. But safety was out the window. We're just going to strap you to this thing whose engine is a stressed member of the chassis.
Yes.
Agreed. So you feel everything. And when I mean everything, you feel everything.
It was nuts.
I've never felt such direct handling. I've never been so intimidated by a car. Yet the skills still apply.
Yeah, that's very good.
So when you start to go faster and faster, you think, okay, it's not like I don't know anything. My skills still apply. It's just now I'm taking in the world and making decisions faster and faster, which is astounding. And then getting true speed and not having a speedometer because it's a race car. But I know I'm going fast because my helmet is about to be sucked off my head.
That's very
good. Good thing I had it belted in really tight.
You're right, man.
I felt the helmet try to come off.
Absolutely. On the front straight every single time. Yeah.
And then the noise, the speed, the sensations.
I love it. That's great.
Was truly a pinnacle driving event in my driving career. And this was just a 1978 F1 car, but I'd love to drive that car again. I'd love to drive any of them again. What a moment in time, though.
I love you included. That's a great list.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
We're going to jump straight to questions. We don't have time to cover the car debate.
You don't want to hear 12 through 39?
Not right now.
Everybody's wondering where the cheap cars are. I had K cars on my list. I had Lotuses. I had all the GR cars. I had 5 Porsches, the GT4 RS. I
can't believe you.
All the 911s, all the
40 cars on your list.
By the way, number 12 was the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio. Just so everyone knows.
All right.
That almost made the list.
Hey.
But, you know, F1 cars did take the.
Okay. I think the list was very fun. I really like this. If you have a topic Tuesday you'd like us to just rant about, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Many of you are sending in really, really great ones. Thank you for that. We got a lot more coming, so we appreciate it. Let's jump to some questions. There's an interesting question here from Dammy. Now, and you guys need to understand that Dammy has been listening to this show. Actually, that's not even fair. Dammy has been watching our videos since pretty much the beginning.
Yeah, he has.
Okay, so he's been with us about as long as anybody in your audience. Thank you, Dammy. Thank you to all of you who've listened to this podcast since the beginning. If you've just found us or if you've never rated us, we would love a rating and a review of this podcast because that's how other people find us. We really appreciate the fact that you mention. I mean, it's cool to read the reviews. And honestly, when people leave bad reviews, I'm like, huh, do we do that? Is that a problem? Sometimes they're leaving a review feels like a very different show, but generally, the reviews are helpful. Honestly, they are. We love your rating and a review. Help other people find the podcast. And we'd love for you to tell a friend. If you want to support the show further, that's what Patreon is about. We have a really cool Discord community that is much bigger than Paul and I and very, very fun. But I wanted to call Dammy out because he's been around asking questions forever. He's back with one that I'm not. There's info behind this, Dammy, that you'd have to tell us, but I'm going to try to answer it anyway. He said, how do we stay grounded and avoid a lot of the, quote, automotive YouTuber drama? Dammy, what are you referring to? I get the sense you're specifically referring to something, and I'm not sure what.
Is it just the crashing or buying a car and trying to rebuild it and realizing that it's expensive to rebuild an 812 Superfast?
Weird. But we've bought cars for the purpose of the show, and we will continue to. So, I mean, we've done that in the YouTube. You said, do we think that avoiding the drama hurts or helps our channel? And then he also thanks us for not swearing on the podcast because it allows him to listen to it with his kids. That is important for us. It's funny because people that go with us on our adventures get surprised by the fact that Paul and I cuss.
And we're so like, often a little,
we do. We're human. We do it. Yes, we just try really hard not to do it on the podcast. Because look, if you're sitting in the carpool lane right now, that's why we don't.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's a big thing. So Dammy, I'm glad that you like it. Let me try to talk about this YouTuber drama for a minute. Now, we don't drag race because we think it proves nothing. I mean, you get to see which car was faster that day, but it doesn't. Ultimately, the core of what we do, I was thinking about this recently because we were talking to a bunch of automotive YouTubers last week at this Toyota event, many of whom are friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the big thing that's interesting to both Paul and I that we keep circling back to, I can't overstate this, is, are you having fun? Is the car you're driving any fun?
Yeah.
We can take the stats, we do take the stats, and make fun or find a revelation, be like, oh, that's really impressive that they did that. We can do all that stuff, but ultimately, I don't care about any of that. If I'm not having fun in the vehicle, then I don't care how well it was engineered. Or if it's terribly engineered, but have you seen how much fun I'm having? This is what matters for us. It's very important. So we always try to have fun. We're not trying to chase the algorithm or what is hot right now. I can't stand the vlogger culture. Hey, everybody. And I'm staring at the camera and I'm spinning the camera around. And I mean, people have been wildly successful with that format.
Shockingly so.
Okay. It's just not who we are. We are, the guys you hear on the podcast are the same guys that are on video, are the same guys that go on adventures and hang out with friends. This is just who we are. We don't have another way to be. We don't have something we can like put on like a costume. I'm doing the show now. Right. That doesn't exist.
No.
I will say this. We would benefit if we'd done collaborations. Most of the channels we know that have done collaborations, it has helped both channels. We have done few to none of any kind over the 17 years of doing the show. We've been at it for longer than most. And it's not because we're against it. It's because, and I'm giving my own assessment. I think we're hard to collaborate with because we're not necessarily going to do a gag. We're not going to
like gags.
Yeah, we're
going to
watch our road trips.
We can be goofy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not necessarily going to do a drag race with you. And we are a two-host show going back and forth. So do you add two more hosts? Do you add one more host? How do you incorporate? What's the vibe? Who makes what for the channel? These are
always, where does the video end up? Who gets the dollars?
Yes, these are big questions we've asked on some collaboration opportunities, and some of them have fizzled out as a result. It's not a lack of interest, but we are... Somebody made a comment actually just today on the WRX Corolla video where they just said they appreciated the fact that we have a format that works and we stand by it. That's who we are. So we try to avoid extremes of drama. Here is the worst thing ever. Here's a picture of me with my head in my hands and a car smoking behind me. Or here's the thing we lit on fire. Or here, I don't feel like any
because
of that's real.
Because it's played up for the camera. It's played up for... It's fakery. It's fakery in a lot of cases.
You know, you're right. And something else that's very interesting that you and I do, and the more we talk to others, the more I find that others don't. And this is not a critique. It's just an observation. You and I don't script stuff. Mm-mm. We write talking points. Like for this podcast, we have talking points. In the car, we have talking points like, hey, remember this. Or by the way, there's this stat.
Right, just make sure you talk about it.
Be sure these are included at some point. But we are literally sharing with you the feelings we're having while driving these cars. And that's nowhere better evidence than watch any of our road trips. Watch our 2,000-mile piece in the Lotus and the Vette. That's a great piece to just watch us discover the roads we're on in cars we love and go to national monuments or things of history and just be like, here's how that struck me. None of this is scripted, which also makes us hard to collaborate with. So I'm open to it.
Yeah.
But we are not, woohoo, yo, guys, welcome back to the channel. I can't even do it that long.
Yeah, and it also comes back to wanting to make the show that you and I always wanted to watch.
Sure, yeah.
Definitely comes back, that has an element of it, but we're always critical thinkers when it comes to what do we want the result to be, not to script the opinion of where the car stands or where it places, but what's the point? How are we enriching your life and using your time better and our time better to reach a conclusion that actually helps you and is actually meaningful rather than just blabbing at the mouth for some reason and here's all the stats and specs and yay. What conclusion are we trying to reach? What by doing this comparison, what are we setting out to do? It has to pass a lot of criteria for video content, certainly podcast content too, but we've got high standards for ourselves and believe you me, when we're doing edit, we pass A-rolls back and forth, and we're very critical of ourselves, what we're saying and how we're coming across. And okay, you said this, did you mean that? Because people are listening.
Well, I'll tell you the other side of the equation. Invariably, I will tell you just personally, every single video we release, I'm always like, dang it, here's six things that are still wrong. But at some point it has to go out.
Yeah.
So yeah.
All right, moving over to Instagram, Nick L. Nick Lancey says, is there a car you don't want to see safarized, or should we safari all the cars? The reason he asked this is because spotted David Lockhart's Cayenne at Sebring Raceway. It is orange. It's the same year as yours, Tony.
Yes, I'm paying attention. Yes, I am.
It's super cool. He had all the partners that he did the build with, and I really liked it. It was really cool, eye-catching paint, and I just thought it was... stood out. And so I took photos and posted those. And so on one hand, Nick, I don't want to see all the sports cars safariized because it seems like sacrilege. On the other hand, if it means I don't have to drive another SUV and the sports car does what an SUV can, but I still get to drive a sports car, let's safari everything as far as the eye can see from here to eternity.
Okay.
Let's all do that. I guess, Nick, that's part of the reason why I like that 959 so much is because it had its roots in Group B, which is the unlimited class of rally.
Yeah,
encouraging manufacturers, cheat, make up stuff.
Come here, go nuts. Yeah.
Whatever you can do to win, we welcome that.
Yeah, you're right.
Short of maybe. Steroids.
It was the 70s and 80s. I guess so. Whatever.
Do whatever you want to the car, and we're good with it. Bring all the tech.
That's very funny.
And that... sadly, didn't survive. That category of racing never survived.
Yeah, it was gone before the 959 showed up. Right. Oops. Yeah.
But that kind of thinking, like to bring new, fresh thinking and to be able to pour all that into a sports car, but yet it had its roots in rally, but really it's designed for track use and for the road, and it could kind of do everything, rally, track, and the 959 Comfort is designed for everyday use.
Mm-hmm.
It was. So to have that all wrapped up into a single car is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, I see it.
But here we have, you know, it's the cool new trend. Let's make things go off road that never were intended to go off road.
What is it? Dirt's for the bold. What was the terrible tagline of the Serato?
Serato.
So yeah, dust is gold and dirt's for the bold.
Why is dirt for the bold?
I
what does that even
sure
mean?
It was one of the worst bits of copywriting I've ever encountered from a major manufacturer, and that is saying something.
That was terrible.
Okay, anyway, Mr. McGillicuddy, last question from me. Is the MX-5 Miata going the way of many other focused, lightweight, two-seat sports cars? I guess by saying that, you're saying, is it going to die or become heavier and full of tech? That's what I'm reading into your question, because I'm not sure what you're calling out. The Miata's in a very interesting place, because... if you get in a modern ND Miata, in a tiny little space, I don't fit, unfortunately, in a tiny little space, it has all of the tech that any modern $30,000-something dollar car would have. All of it. All the stuff you would expect in a car you spent $30,000 on is in the little tiny Miata cabin.
Mm.
And yet, it weighs about 2,500 pounds, which is lighter than most everything, and is a dedicated rear-wheel drive sports car. That is an accomplishment. What's interesting is Miata broke their own mold by going from the third gen to the fourth gen and getting smaller and lighter, and when they first released it, less powerful. I think that was a real major watershed moment for the Miata, where Mazda said, we're not just going to follow the trend of what's happening to every single car. We're going to pull the Miata out of the flow and rethink it. I think that sets them up to be the oddball with the Miata.
Mm.
I think it's always going to have as much luxury as they can pack into that little car, because a lot of their market segment buying it wants a car to still be nice and luxurious, so they can't get rid of that. But keeping it small and light and against the grain is something the Miata can continue to be, though I still expect the next version will be electrified, probably hybridized somehow, and probably weigh closer to 3,000 pounds,
it's got
unfortunately.
A 12-volt. Can we call it electrified?
Yeah, exactly. There's electricity flowing through it. Yeah. Can we be done? I hope it isn't. I'm worried about it being 2,800 to 3,000 pounds and being bigger because it's now electrified. I hope they keep it out of the flow of the trend. But the Miata has that history, so maybe.
All right, last question for me, and then we'll wrap things up. Our friend Color Cartel Andrew in Austin, Texas. His canvas is anything.
Yes.
And his brushes are rattle can spray paint canes.
And if you haven't seen his Instagram, their stuff is phenomenally good.
He's really great. I have talked about the number of spokes that imply luxury or sport.
Okay.
Color Cartel Andrew is wondering if there's an understood implication of chiseled and masculine versus elegant feminine designs.
Mm.
Or is it more like liveries, where the field zigs to colorful schemes and you simply zag to black? I suppose a bit of both, and I'm trying to to extrapolate what you're meaning here, but you're really talking about forms and style and how mm-hmm. that appeals. Mm-hmm. You live in the world of color, certainly, and that can do that for a car. But for the most part, forms and shapes are definitely talked about in the design studio as being the chiseled and masculine forms, and those might manifest themselves in more of an off-road or truck kind of styling.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they don't appeal to women.
That's good. That's
conversely, very good. Elegant feminine designs are suited for a GT car or a different driving experience that styling implies what that car's market is, but that could very well appeal to men.
Mm.
Absolutely, both are relevant, but it really comes down to the mood board and the customer for which the car is being designed. Because
oh, you're so right.
Imagine a car without a customer.
Yeah.
Design a car that's for everyone and no one.
The Homer. Yeah. Or the Aztec, for that matter. Anyway,
well,
moving on.
You
yeah,
know
yeah.
what I mean?
But I'm totally with you. Yeah.
If we didn't have standards and a style guide or a guide to mm-hmm. make the purpose of the car and what the market is we're going after and help the marketing department either decide, is it young families with kids? Is it older couples? Like, who should we put in the ad? Help us out here.
Is it beanies or walkers?
Yeah.
Which way are we going?
Yes.
That's very funny.
But ultimately, it comes down to what do we, the engineers, the designers, want that car to drive like? What's powering it? How much horsepower does it have? What is its intended use and market?
I like it.
And that will make the form follow the function first. That is design rule 101 when you go to design school, is form follows function. Mm. It is rare that you get a form and the function follows that. And there's some cars out there that are like that. Not many, but it's always decided upon. Let's make the function of this car, and then what are the forms that are applied to this to make it beautiful or off-roady or chiseled or, you know, look like it's a self-made truck or something like that. Those discussions absolutely happen for every single model. Guys, thank you for all your questions. We really appreciate it. Thank you for the Topic Tuesdays.
It was a lot great. Of fun. It was very fun.
We welcome all your top 11 ideas. That's what it is. From here on out, it's your
more
top 11.
Top 11s. Only at Everyday
Driver.
Top
10s are boring.
That's very good stuff.
We got to leave the door open, right? For just one more. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to next time. As always, cheers, everyone.